My guest this morning is Dr. Stephanie Brown, a licensed psychologist with more than 35 years of experience. She directs the Addictions Institute, an outpatient clinic that's in Menlo Park, California. She's the author of 10 books on the subject of addiction and maintains a private practice as well. This book that we're talking about today is entitled Speed, Facing Our Addiction to Fast and Faster and Overcoming Our Fear of Slowing Down. Dr. Brown, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh,
yay.
My gosh. I think I have just missed hearing something wonderful about you describing the book.
Well, I went through it, and, sometimes talk show hosts don't read the book, but I read your book, and I'm glad I did while we're bringing that up. So tell me a little bit about what prompted you to write this particular book. As I mentioned in the introduction, you've been involved in addiction therapies for a number of years, and you've seen it for some of the classical things that we think of, like drug or alcohol addiction. How did you begin to notice this in terms of the faster-paced world that we're in?
Well, being an addiction specialist in the heart of the Silicon Valley was what did it. Back in the 1990s, it was the beginnings of the rush for discovery, development that became almost an instant high in the culture. So I began to feel like I was living in the midst of a society that was chaotic, wild, and out of control in ways that are very similar to addiction and especially to dynamics that develop in an addicted family.
And is a lot of this, can you blame some of this on technology? I think I've had this experience we all have where I've been to a restaurant and I've seen a couple or even a family and every single member is on their smartphone and not looking at each other as they eat dinner. I mean, it's almost like a stereotype, but is that part of the problem? Is technology creating this faster pace?
Technology is definitely contributing to it. I don't really have problems saying it's creating it either. It's more than technology itself. Technology, I think, should be a tool for all of us, something to enhance our lives. But we have actually sacrificed our human relationships, even our relationships with ourselves, turning over the authority, the main event, to technology the same exact way people turn over the value to alcohol, to gambling, to eating, so that technology becomes the center of our lives rather than an adjunct that could enhance it.
And what are some of the first signs that you might be addicted to technology?
Well, first of all, behaviorally, you can't stop. You need to stop. You want to stop. You want to put down your gear, and you can't do it. Then you find yourself listening for the beep. You begin to watch yourself putting technology and putting that next beep at the center of your world.
And so you just move from point to point. I know we just got you on the line, but we need to take a short break this morning. When we come back, we'll take some of your phone calls. You can reach us anywhere in the listening area from 800-838-3760, in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Again, we're speaking with Dr. Stephanie Brown, the author of the new book, Speed, Facing Our Addiction to Fast and Faster and Overcoming Our Fear of Slowing Down. We'll be back right after this short break. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. We are speaking with Dr. Stephanie Brown. She is a licensed psychologist with more than 35 years of experience in Menlo Park, California, and directs the Addictions Institute, also the author of a new book entitled Speed, Facing Our Addiction to Fast and Faster and Overcoming Our Fear of Slowing Down. Dr. Brown, let me ask you, what is wrong with going faster? Some people must actually thrive on this.
Well, some people believe they thrive, and certainly feeling the excitement, is a wonderful experience and a high. A lot of people can't see that they're beginning to have negative consequences, that this fast-paced, never-stopping is creating huge costs, physical costs, stress disorders. People are having sleep problems, chronic anxiety, depression. People are constantly feeling that they're failing because they want to go faster. They keep going faster, but then there's no end. You no longer get to the point where you say, that's enough. That's enough. People then change their thinking. They begin to believe they shouldn't have any limits. They're entitled to live without limits. And pretty soon, it's a vicious cycle that is exactly addiction, all driven by this wrong belief, false belief, that fast equals success.
I know in your background you've worked with 12-step programs as a way of dealing with different types of addictions. Is this kind of thing responsive to a 12-step program, or do you have to modify that somewhat?
Oh, what a wonderful question. Yes, I believe that it is responsive to a 12-step program, and there are many different kinds of 12-step programs. One of the programs that I speak about that is really helpful with this issue of speed is Debtors Anonymous. There's another program growing in our country called All Addictions, and the 12-step program addresses the out-of-control behavior, the feelings that grow in intensity of anxiety and panic, the internal pressures. And the 12-step philosophy also addresses the distortions in thinking, this belief that we shouldn't have any limits. So yes, indeed, the programs would be very helpful.
What are some of the initial steps, for example, just a little recommendation or two that you could give to people to help them start that initial process?
First of all, I am not advocating a radical abstinence from technology and abstinence from your life, and a lot of people are afraid that's what it would mean. If you put down your phone, you're going to fail. You're going to feel tremendous emptiness, which may sometimes happen. Start small. The beginning is to become aware. The beginning is to ask yourself, what am I doing? And then to think about very, very small steps. One good example is to put your phone down for 15 minutes, maybe half an hour or an hour, for a return to a family dinner. That's a wonderful start. Another example that I actually got from working with a client coming from Oregon was the concept of the tech mudroom, that, you know, you just like you put your rain gear in the mud room when you come and go in the storms. There's a place for technology within the home to allow for free space, tech-free space. And again, dinner time is a wonderful place to begin that change. So awareness and small steps. Nothing big. Big undoes us. We're working for small change, small steps, day by day.
Some of us have multiple email accounts that are filtered into our smartphones, private and professional. And generally, it seems to make life easier when you know that something is happening at work and you need that information. But how can you manage that? On one hand, you appreciate having that sort of connection. But at the other hand, it can get out of control. Do you have any recommendations on how to deal with that?
And you state that very, very well. It's both great and problematic at the same time. First, I want to go back to awareness, just like you described it. We all need to turn from our external focus, pushing buttons, racing. We need to turn inward to be able to self-reflect. As soon as you're able to recognize what's happening with you, you are able to begin to set limits. turn to the small steps. And what you might do is designate times of the day that you're going to check those various email accounts. Some of them you'll be on all day if you're working, but others designate specific times of the day. You must create the structure for setting limits on yourself, and that is really tough. That's when you can feel the draw, the craving to go look, to go take a peek. If you find yourself more and more overwhelmed, you're going to have to step back. And then just remember, it's only a small step. Postpone the looking and designate times. Create the structure from which you can operate rather than just letting yourself go, which is what drives you to out of control.
We're speaking with Dr. Stephanie Brown, a psychologist. She is the author of the book Speed, Facing Our Addiction to Fast and Faster and Overcoming Our Fear of Slowing Down. If you have a question or observation about the speed of our society that we live in today, you can call us anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. It seems like we used to communicate by talking to our neighbors over the fence. So not only do we have these cell phones that create sort of an artificial barrier with other people, but it seems like in our neighborhoods and elsewhere, we don't have as much interaction with people in a conversational kind of way. We have to say everything in 140 characters or less. Can you kind of address that? How do you engage these conversations with people when we live in a society that doesn't really encourage that as much anymore?
Well, again, you just described it beautifully. And first of all, we have to become aware that we have lost something so valuable in terms of human relationship that exists in enhancing reciprocity, mutuality, exchange back and forth, live, but even if it isn't live, the exchange back and forth verbally, we've given it up and we no longer value this interpersonal relationship. So one of the costs, in addition to the individual stress disorders that I was talking about, another huge cost is close, deep, intimate relationships. People have redefined relationship as the number of hits, the number of likes, the number of friends collected on the internet, or these brief exchange that exchanges data, information. But what's not possible anymore is the deepening back and forth. The deepening in a vertical way, person to person, so that what's become most valued is quick, wide breadth of topical exchanges. Now, we have got to recognize what we're losing. We must step back again, reflect on the loss, because it takes conscious awareness and planning to reinstate the importance, the absolute necessity of live interpersonal interaction.
Back two or three decades ago, it was quite common to hear the phrase, you can have it all. And it seemed to be directed, I may be wrong, but it seemed to be directed mostly at women, that they could have a career and they could still manage the home and do all of this. And then maybe there was some fallout in the last 10 years where people were starting to reassess that. Is this problem of speed and fast and faster thinking, is this something that is equal for both sexes now, or are women or men more prone to have this issue?
It's absolutely equal for both sexes, the same exact problem. What I'm reading and seeing is that for men, it's often an interpretation of traditional success, and women, the press keeps focusing on balance. How can you have more balance? Again, the sense that both men and women should be able to have it all, do it all, and therein lies the absolute false, distorted thinking. The belief system that you are entitled to have it all and you should be able to do this. It is beyond our human capacities, beyond our human limits, really fostered by technology and cyberspace. We can't do it. Women can't do it. Men can't do it. There's a review of a book in the New York Times yesterday called Overwhelmed, a new book that's similar to Speed. But what the reviewer says is that we're back to looking that women should try harder. And that's where we get stuck with both men and women in this culture. Well, you should be able to do everything. Just try harder. And there's no more trying harder. That's what I'm saying. There's no more trying harder. The harder you try, you know, the more you fall, really, and the more you feel like you're failing.
You're in the Silicon Valley area. I mean, that has to be one of the most hyper-competitive places on Earth. Is it a localized problem? I'm imagining, you know, we have a lot of rural area here in Oregon, especially east of the Cascades, farmland and ranches. Is this more of a problem that affects an urban environment than a rural?
I think so at this point in time, but the whole world is catching up. And, you know, the spread of technology and the internal drive created by constant looking and pressing buttons exists everywhere globally now. I have had colleagues report being in the most rural lands of Africa, just very, very primitive areas. And the people are on their cell phones back and forth with one another. So that the same problems with this rush and the belief system can exist and do exist all over the world.
This faster lifestyle, it must manifest itself as well as traditional addictions that we've talked about in the past. People must be medicating, self-medicating to get themselves going in the morning and to bring themselves back down in the evening. Is that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And self-medication is a really important word because that's how people are coming to feel about all of their equipment and the need, that sense of panic. I haven't heard. Nobody's, you know, nobody's emailed in. Nobody's texting. And the sense I'm being left behind, a rise in the intensity of panic. And then comes the ping. Listening for the ping provides the jolt, provides the hit, just like that first gulp of alcohol, just like the first puff of a cigarette provided that jolt of relief. Well, now the ping, the sense that somebody's online, provides that sense. It's medication. It provides the high. It tells you that you matter. And it also helps people who think that it helps them relax. It does, and then it also drives them out of control when they can't stop.
I'm not asking you to denigrate any social media sites, but I mean, it seems like today there's a need almost that people have for validation on some of these sites.
Absolutely. I think the need for validation is widespread, and that, you know, again, counting your number of friends or the hits or the likes. And there's a kind of a quality of throwing mud at the wall, hoping that something will stick. And that intensifies the need to get a ping back. Is somebody out there? Did somebody hear? Is somebody reading or seeing me?
I read, and I don't know if this is true, but somebody said you should always post to Facebook early in the afternoon because that's when you'll get the most likes. And I thought, well, maybe people are not working if that's what they're doing. I don't know.
That's very interesting. Isn't that interesting? Whoa. Looking for the return. There's definitely a gambling mentality, very closely related.
Interesting. We have a call from Sandy in Mount Shasta. Go ahead, Sandy.
Yeah, hi. Wow, what a great topic. I'm going to definitely have to get a copy of your book. But right now, I've been trying to search within it in both Amazon and Google, and it's not that searchable yet. But I did come up with something that I would hope you might be, want to elaborate on. A little quote here, it says, according to the website, it doesn't say which website, our current educational system and parenting practices are out of alignment with the well-documented needs of children. As a result, we're seeing rising and debilitating levels of emotional problems, and et cetera. And, boy, I'm totally in agreement with that, and I'd like to hear what you have to say more about that.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank you, indeed. The impact on children is already, I think, really terrible, actually. Extreme impact. Think that because of our beliefs that children need more and more information, they need to be programmed, we are pushing them. We are seeing such a high increase in stress disorder in children. Children are being diagnosed with all kinds of psychiatric ailments and given medications at very young ages. I am enormously alarmed by the belief system in the culture of the need to push children. Push, push, or they'll never make it in this current world. So you are absolutely correct.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think about my children, my older children. Cell phones weren't around. My middle children, I have quite a few kids, I should say. My middle children, it was sort of like, it was kind of optional and left up to the parents, and my wife and I decided we didn't want our kids to have cell phones to school, I'm talking about specifically. And now with my younger kids, it's almost a necessity. Everybody has one, and my wife and I caved on our younger kids as well. Because it just seems like to function, you know, the band teacher communicates by cell phone to let us know what changes are happening with the band trip or whatever. And it seems like society has really changed where it's reinforcing some of these things.
Society is absolutely reinforcing these things. And again, we haven't really talked about the three-stranded necklace. Let me bring that up here because I talk about addiction as having three major components, your behavior, your feelings, and your thinking. Now, we are really tapping into the thinking part of it here and the belief system that you must get on the bandwagon or you will be left behind. That is society. That stems from this sense that we are entitled to have it all, so get on board. And exactly what you're describing about the school system. There's more and more pressures to wire up, to be everybody on technology. I heard from a parent in my local school system here, the parent who said my daughter was required. She was the only one without a cell phone, and she wasn't going to pass the exam without it.
Because of that. We're speaking with Dr. Stephanie Brown, a psychologist who has written a new book entitled Speed, Facing Our Addiction to Fast and Faster and Overcoming Our Fear of Slowing Down. We'll be back with more questions here on The Exchange in just a short bit. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR's News and Information Service. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. We're talking about the ever-faster pace of life in our society and how it can lead to addiction problems and some of the solutions that we could implement to slow our lives down a little bit. You can join the conversation today anywhere in the listening area at 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, you can call 541-552-6782, or you can send us an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Our guest is Dr. Stephanie Brown. She is a licensed psychologist with more than 35 years of experience. She directs the Addictions Institute, which is an outpatient clinic in Menlo Park, California, and she's the author of a new book entitled Speed, Facing Our Addiction to Fast and Faster and Overcoming Our Fear of Slowing Down. Before we went to break, you were talking a little bit about that three strands. Could you elaborate a little more on that?
Yes, thanks. Most people think that addiction is all about behavior. You can't stop, and that is exactly correct, but there's more to it. It is not only behavior. If you think it's just behavior, you're going to say, well, get a grip, just stop it. But you don't, and you can't. Behavior is also driven by your feelings, the panic you feel, the craving, the need to have what you're going after. And then, boy, the linchpin is your thinking, and we rarely acknowledge the thinking. Society, our culture, lives with a lot of distorted thinking. That is addictive thinking. That's the denial of limits, a belief in entitlement, a belief that we can control whatever we want, whenever we want. And all of these false beliefs lead us into repetitive actions that become out of control, that lead us to addiction. And that's where we are in the culture now with the pace of life.
We have a caller from Dexter. Pam is on the line. Go ahead, Pam.
Hi. Well, I moved up from Los Angeles about a little over 20 years ago after 2 years of living in a totally crazy, manic, fast-paced city. And when I first moved up, I lived way out on the Mackenzie River, and I would be driving to work, and everybody would be racing each other, passing each other on this little two-lane highway. And you know, I was really tired of that whole mentality of faster passing and competitiveness that you had in L.A. And so I thought, well, gee, if I just left 10 minutes earlier, I could let everybody pass me and enjoy the beautiful drive along the river. And pretty much I've adopted that lifestyle of just driving in a more calm way. And it's amazing how it calms your whole body down. And, you know, you feel like really the rat race goes ahead of you. They pass you and they're doing their little dance. And another thing I've learned is I live out in the foothills of the Cascades, and I pretty much go for a walk every day in the woods. And that is such a healing, calming thing. I mean, it doesn't matter what is going on in my life. That walk in the woods totally centers me, slows me down. And I think it's a natural healer. And I wondered if you talked about that in your book. And then I wanted to make the connection of climate change and people living these fast-paced lives, because I've called this radio show a few times and said, you know, if we just lowered the speed limit to 55 miles an hour, we would save an estimated billion gallons of gasoline a year. Mm. So there's something wrong with, I think we need to be in harmony with nature and be at the pace of nature. And not only will we heal ourselves, we could potentially heal the planet. And I'll just listen on the air what your response is. And the basic question is, do you talk about being in nature as a way to kind of heal this addiction to being plugged into the technology?
Well, thank you so much. What a wonderful set of examples and how to modify behavior. And what you describe is beautifully put. First of all, you said you had to become aware. You had to realize that you could change the time of your driving, and you did it. This is now also called mindfulness, moving our attention from the external, fast, everything moving, back to inner reflection and paying attention. Quieting, and everything that you describe that you value, all of those steps are absolutely key to the kinds of changes that I'm advocating. I'm not sure, I don't think I have an example about nature exactly, but everything you said reflects the advice that I'm giving in this book.
Pam has the advantage of living by the Cascades, of taking a nice walk out in a beautiful area. What would you recommend for people who are in a more urban environment and they find that, you know, sometimes you just can't get away from the long commutes to and from work? What would you say for folks in that situation?
In any situation, the individual can pause, just pause, quiet, and look inward. Quiet and look inward. Now, this really takes the individual becoming aware. How many times have I used that word, awareness? If you are feeling raced and pressured wherever you are, pause. Put the phone down. Put your pencil down. Pause. Close your eyes. Reflect. Look for the quiet inside. And you will find it, but you have to be willing to take that pause. Now, this takes us right back to that three-stranded necklace, because if you believe you don't dare slow down. You are going to convince yourself that you mustn't even pause, that you are risking your job, you're risking failure if you allow yourself quiet times.
Some people are pretty good at sort of self-directed change, and other folks need help. What would you recommend for people who are in that latter category?
The people who need help? We all need help. We all need help. And as well as being able to come to the awareness ourselves. But I really recommend reaching out, asking for help, finding a mentor. Just like we're having this conversation, we are sharing our experiences with one another this morning. You know, you all already know about speed. I am not convincing you of anything. You're having wonderful examples. There are plenty of people in the world out there, just like us, having this conversation, looking to have new conversations, the value of quiet, the value of pause, the value of listening, the value of taking stock, all of that. Once you are talking with somebody, the two of you, the three of you, can together craft a plan how to take timeouts, how to structure your environment to allow for that quieter time and pace. All we need is one friend. I call it the compatriot, the one who supports us in slowing down. And then once we begin family conversation, neighborhood conversations, and remember, this is a slow pace of change, but the new conversations about the values we are giving up and the value of quiet that we need to reclaim, those conversations will take root.
If you have a question this morning for Dr. Stephanie Brown, we're talking about the ever-increasing speed of our society and how it can lead to addictions and problems. If you have some personal observations or some things you've seen about society in general, you could give us a call at 800-838-3760 in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send us an email, jx@jeffnet.org. Just reading your bio, you look busy. I'm going to put you on the spot. How do you slow down?
Oh, thank you very much. Now, I come and go out of this problem. I know it, I recognize it, and I can get so revved up. I know it well, and so I really have to pause, exactly what I've said. I have to pause, take a breath, slow down. I already know the beliefs. I know the changes. I value quiet time. So when I lose it, when I lose my grip on it, and I start to become out of control and revved up, I just step back, slow down, close my eyes, pause, and try to regain that sense of quiet. And what I find, what I truly believe in, is that as soon as we have the practice of slowing ourselves down periodically through the day, you and I will find that our thinking is different. Everything is different. I have greater access to my own depth of feeling, complexity of feeling, complexity of thought, than when I am revved up and racing and thinking and feeling out of panic.
We have Dennis on the line from Eugene. Go ahead, Dennis.
Hi. Say, I have a question for you. I think that we have a dilemma here. Your message is a nice message and an idyllic message, and I have no problem with it, except that I don't think that it fits into the real world. The real world is saying, go faster, spend more money, get to the top, and this real world opinion is coming from our politicians, our priests, our rabbis, our the leaders of all the religions. It's coming from news TV. It's coming from talk radio. If you turn on talk radio today, all you're going to hear is about how you should work harder, and if you don't, you're a scum. If you don't go get that SUV, you're really a terrible person. If you don't stomp your neighbor to get to the top, why, there's something wrong with you. And that is a Christian message nowadays. So this country's predominantly Christian. you can see where we're at. We're going in the wrong direction. So I think that while this is a nice message, we got to figure out a whole new paradigm somehow. And that's what I'm interested in, and I want to know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis. You're describing what I'm describing in the book. Yes, you know, this emphasis, this addiction to fast, to success as faster and faster, is what is the real world. And what I'm saying is what you're saying, that we aren't going to change as a culture until one by one we, like you, like me, say, wait a second, what are we doing? What are we doing? We're out of control. Let's take a look at our beliefs and our values. And it may be idealistic at this point. There are many people who are not interested at all in taking a look at this reality, that speed is costing us terribly. But we all need to begin to recognize it, to begin to talk about it, if we're going to make any changes at all.
It seems, and I don't want to say it's easy, but sometimes it seems easy that you can implement individual change or societal change. But how do you deal with a family situation, the people you have to live with? That sometimes seems like the toughest of all.
What wonderful questions. The family situation is actually a good one in terms of information available, because you look to the books about addiction and addiction recovery and changing the structures in the family. One person in the family can step out of an addictive family system, whether it's to alcohol, to all drugs, or to the fast pace of life. One person can say, I'm going too fast, I'm going to slow down, I'm going to, you know, have a mud room for the tech equipment. We're going to have, you know, one family dinner a week you start with, and get agreement. You begin talking. It, again, take it slowly. People are threatened. People think, you're going to take something away from me. So it's slow and small incremental change. One person at a time can make those changes. You put down your cell phone and you look around at those in your family who are on theirs, and you begin to talk with them. Very small.
And then that change will come about. We have about 30 seconds left. Any final advice that you could give us?
Oh, my. The final advice is small. Incremental. The culture believes in everything big, 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 gigantic. And I'm saying, no, small. Take it small, incremental, and we will become more willing to see the reality and to begin to have these smaller conversations. You and I think everything is big, we go away feeling really down, really discouraged. About what might be possible.
We've been talking today with Dr. Stephanie Brown, the author of Speed, Facing Our Addictions to Fast and Faster and Overcoming Our Fear of Slowing Down. Stephanie, thank you so much for being on the Jefferson Exchange this hour.
Thank you so much. Wonderful.
Coming up tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll talk about a new bee school coming to the Rogue Valley, as in buzzing bees. Then we'll check in with Eugene's Safe Spot Homeless Camp to see how things are going there. During the 9 o'clock hour, we'll explore grief and the process of healing after a loved one's death. All of that is tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. The producer of The Exchange is Charlotte Duran. I'm Milt Radford, filling in today for Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for joining us.